The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
So great to see you. My name is Seicho, and I am one of the senior students here at the Zendo. I live in the Bay Area in California, so that's one reason that it might be appearing brighter outside than maybe where you're sitting. In any case, it's really good to be together. It's a very precious time, you know, these reopenings. And now, you know, for some of us to actually be able to be meeting in person and also to be able to continue this way that I'm very grateful for online. And I was thinking of this in terms of how we really belong to each other. I was remembering a time some years back at the Zendo when a dear Sangha member, Sybil Miocean Taylor, who has since passed on, one of our elder bodhisattvas, I was getting together with her, and I was lamenting in that moment. I said to her, you know, I just feel like I don't belong anywhere. And I remember her great welcoming smile in that moment, as in so many moments, you know. And often, when I would lament something, and not just me, you know, and a lot of people would lament to her, she had this great way of joining, and she'd go, "Me too," you know, and you just felt so good, like you were not alone, you know. But in this case, what was really surprising is there I was lamenting, oh, you know, I just feel like I don't belong anywhere. And she sort of chuckled. And she said, "Oh, that's so funny because everywhere I go, I always feel like I belong." You know, when she said that, I just laughed because it was so unexpected. And so, you know, no nonsense, straight ahead, lighthearted, totally opposite. And yet I felt completely heard and seen and validated and joined, like those two truths were really one truth, you know, and the truth really in that moment was our meeting and her capacity to do that, her longstanding practice, which really like two guitar strings as her ringing brought out that ringing in me, and there we were in resonance. So to me, it's a great illustration and a great example of what's possible and so needed right now that I've been pondering a lot, which is what does it really mean to meet in truth? And particularly when your truth and my truth don't quite jive. So what is that truth in our meeting? Now, I'm trying something new in terms of where my talk is placed, so bear with me. A lot of what I notice when I ponder this, of what it really means to meet in truth, when two truths seem to not line up and there's conflict, you know, particularly, that probably you've noticed this too. There's no escaping this. This is happening everywhere on every level, you know, if we're paying attention, from very minute, seemingly, things that go on in ourselves, in various relationships, people we're close to in our life, family, Sangha life, public health, you know, those who are vaccinated, those who are unvaccinated, all the issues around that, Racial justice efforts, the violence in our midst, hate crimes, issues around policing, and of course, let's never forget climate change. And each of those things has a context. Another way to say that is it comes with a set of conditions, or conditioning. And how do we deal with that? One of the things that's also, I think, inescapable, always been there, and yet, a lot of us are more keenly aware of it, are impacted, which is trauma. And also new understandings of what trauma is. And I'm just a beginner, I'm just learning, so, forgive me if in my amateur understanding of trauma and that healing work, I misspeak. If you want to learn more about that, actually, thanks to Joshin Roshi, shared some weeks back, there was a week-long program that included the premiere of a wonderful film called The Wisdom of Trauma. And so some of us got to see that and also listen to a lot of the wonderful talks that happened. So I highly recommend the film. You can find that. But in any case, one of the things that I'm learning about this is trauma's everywhere. And it's not about what happens, it's our response to it. And particularly the way that we respond disconnects. And there are different ways that we disconnect. You've probably heard about fight, flight, freeze, sometimes there's faint, there are different versions of these, but that basically there's a kind of disconnect. And so how do we reconnect in a healing way? And maybe you've also heard of someone named Rezma Menachem, who's actually been getting a lot of press. And he was featured in that week-long program. He's a trauma specialist and an activist, and he developed a practice called somatic abolition. And I'm just curious, maybe give me a thumbs up if you've heard of it. I just want to get a sense. Okay, so he also wrote a book called My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Minds. And this is what he writes. He writes, trauma decontextualized in a person looks like personality. Trauma decontextualized in a family looks like family traits. Trauma in a people looks like culture. And I want to invite you right now just to notice where that might have landed in your body. Because that is a context. How do we take that kind of thing into account as we meet one another, as we meet the structures in our society, as we encounter our families, our workplaces, our comings and goings, to be considering that. What I label as personality has a context. What I label as family has a context, as family traits, excuse me. And what I label as culture has a context. and that context has included in it disconnection. So how do I reconnect? By bringing back, by becoming aware of that context. And not conceptually, not thinking my way there, but touching into it in the body. Well, the good news is this is actually our practice. I mean, it's really affirming to read something so contemporary about such an important issue that affects us, even if we're not aware of it. He talks about it particularly in the around the issues of racial justice and white supremacy, or what he calls, and a number of people call, white body supremacy. And at the same time, it's broader than that. It's about how do we meet each other in truth. So here's something that I find really helpful. You know, Norman Fisher spoke a few weeks ago at the Zendo, and he talked, among other things, about the body. And this is something, and he read from his new book, which includes a lot of old essays, but also new reflections on these. And this is something from that book, which is called When You Greet Me, I Bow. And he wrote, "This is what I've discovered after many decades of Zen Buddhist practice, that the religious life isn't about truth as much as it is about relationship, or that perhaps truth and relationship are one and the same. In other words, from the standpoint of Zen practice, relationship doesn't mean what we normally think it does. Person meets person, parents and children, friends, relatives, colleagues, all of that. It means all of that, of course, but only as a vehicle for some truth beyond them. Relationship is not something that happens or doesn't happen in a life. It is life's truest truth. Understanding this, fully appreciating it at its depth, goes to the heart of Zen practice." So Roshi also speaks to this in her book, Most Intimate, A Zen Approach to Life's Challenges, which, by the way, was edited by Sybil. Through the quiet awareness of meditation, Roshi writes, "I began to realize the freedom of experiencing myself as relationship." And we can actually do that right now. I mean, we are right now, right? In relationship. So isn't it great? The live words right here, right? So I began to realize the freedom of experiencing myself as relationship rather than as an entity, a separate being. The courage meditation gave me is the courage of my wholeness. And, you know, if we were talking about trauma, we could apply that very directly, because that disconnect in the trauma response is to experiencing that separation. And the reconnection, that contextualizing of it, is to realize that wholeness of relationship, to relate with yourself and with that everything. So there are a lot of ways in Buddhist practice that we contact these, because there are a lot of teachings. And, you know, all spiritual traditions, if you will, you know, worth their salt, as they say, offer a way to do this. So it's not about, you know, my way is the right way. There are many ways. It's really about what is all this pointing to, the truth of relationship, let's say, or wholeness. Well, one of the ways was in an ancient sutra called the Satipatthana Sutra. It talks about something called that the Buddha attributed to the Buddha and the four foundations of mindfulness. And that could be a whole talk in itself. But basically, it's talking about how to actually contact this, contact that intimacy. In Zen, you know, of course, keep in mind that those teachings then encountered cultures, they encountered people, and they remained the same in their essential truth, if you will, or we could say Dharma, but they come to us in a different way. And particularly they come to us through Zazen instruction, and particularly through, you know, Dogen Zenji's encouragement in the Fukan Zazengi, right, the instructions on Zazen, that he talks about Zazen is the Dharma gate of ease and joy, right? And we often make jokes about this because, you know, if you've sat a little, you realize it ain't always a picnic, right? However, as I was pondering all this, you know, it's interesting to consider that maybe it is when we really encounter the pain, the discomfort, you know, the agony of whatever we're going through, the anxiety, and we actually really make contact with it. In that way, we're contextualizing everything. That, you know, you have a moment of, oh, and it is an ease, and it's got a joy. You know, sometimes we call it Dharma joy, which doesn't necessarily look like, hey, hey, hey. It's more like, oh. And of course, we're doing this together, as we are right now. So there it is, a Dharma gate. So how do we deal with this in encountering, you know, the people in our lives? Well, there's a good example of this in a koan that might be familiar to a lot of us, and there are different versions of it. But basically, in the Book of Serenity, let's just say, case two, I believe, it's when Bodhidharma and Emperor Wu encounter each other, right? It's called Bodhidharma's Emptiness. And Emperor Wu asks Bodhidharma, what is the highest meaning of the holy truths? And Bodhidharma said, empty, there's no holy. The emperor said, who are you facing me? Bodhidharma said, don't know. The emperor didn't understand. Bodhidharma subsequently crossed the Yangtze River, came to Shaolin, and faced a wall for 9 years. So what's, you know, there are different things you pick up in a koan at different times in your life, right? And the thing that I picked up on this time, which is interesting, is that the meeting ends up being the meeting of Bodhidharma's don't know and the emperor's not understanding. So, you know, maybe like me, I'd have asked yourself, hey, why didn't Bodhidharma try another angle? You know, the way when you're trying to, you know, get something through to somebody who's not getting it, right? You say, well, how about he didn't do that, right? So there was something about the meeting of the not understanding and the don't know connect. And they're both included. You know, just like a coin, it has heads and it has tails. You can't have heads without tails. You know, you can't thinking, not thinking. We have a lot of examples, right, wrong, you know. And then there's something, the truest truth, that's in that relationship. They're one thing interpenetrated. You know, sometimes you can imagine it like this. So don't know and not understanding come up together. They come up for us all the time, right? When we're on the cushion, when we're struggling with something, whatever it is. And then there they are, the Dharma gate. And we're with somebody who really sees things very differently, and it can, you know, bring up a lot. So very briefly, I wanted to share with you an experience that I had back when I was training in chaplaincy, in healthcare chaplaincy, that really brought this home, although I didn't have this kind of vocabulary for it at the time, which was, I was in my last year of training, a full year residency, so full time, with a peer group of other people training in chaplaincy from all different spiritual traditions. And so we had a fellow who was, you could say, like a ultra-Orthodox rabbi who had changed from being like secular Jewish to becoming Baal Tshuva, which it's kind of mixing religions, but you could say a kind of born again Jew. And then we had a woman who is an Episcopalian deacon. And then there was a woman, and they were white. Then there was a woman, Latina, who is evangelical Christian, who was widowed and from Texas, widowed from an evangelical minister and grieving that, been somewhat recent, and an evangelical man from the same denomination who was a minister and with all these white, Latina, and he identified as Black. Not as African American, as Black. And myself and our teacher was a white woman rabbi from a very sort of progressive end of the Jewish spectrum. So that is the most diverse group I ever was in for chaplaincy training. And what happened is we had this unstructured time every week where anybody could bring anything up. And the point of it really was for us to be in a situation where we don't really know what to do, as it would be if we were entering a patient's room and maybe their family was there or something like that. And how would we deal with that? How would we relate to people who see things differently than us? So a lot of times these things would start with long, long pauses. Nobody wanted to start the conversation. But then one time, this woman who's evangelical, she said, well, I would love to know what y'all think of salvation. So my immediate impulse was something like, uh-oh. But then I thought, I went to my go-to, right? And my go-to was, oh, I know, I'll do the translating, you know, into your theology, into my cosmology, and we'll meet in the middle, and isn't this how life is? You know, you say potato, I say potato. And I said, well, you know, as Thich Nhat Hanh talks about in Living Buddha, Living Christ, and I, you know, whatever that was about. And then I said, you know, so from a Buddhist perspective, salvation, you know, is equivalent to our bodhisattva vow and that we're saving all beings and that the way we do that is being one, whatever my thing was, right? And that didn't work so great. Because she was not satisfied and neither were some others because there was, you know, and everybody, you can imagine, there's a lot of tension building up. And then I had this moment where I realized, oh, in this view, there's only one truth, which is I'm not saved. And I need to be saved. And saved means something very particular. And I remember the moment where I really let go and I allowed that to be present, that we had this truth and this truth, and actually we had a number of truths in the room, that we're not going to be on the same page, you know? But the truth of the moment was that I could connect and I could accept. And I had a moment of grieving, you know, I did mourn in a way, because I realized I had to let go of a dream that I had of what I thought real understanding is. And what ended up happening is we became, she and I particularly, much closer, because we ended up connecting in that same conversation and in the ones that followed around how we cared for people and how we practiced. And so at the end of our unit, she gifted me, and I treasure it, it's a version from her denomination of the New Testament, which also includes Psalms. And in it, she inscribed it and she wrote to Judy, "May God bless you as you read his word." And what's so lovely is I feel that blessing still. There's no contradiction, because the truths and the truth resonate. And I hope that this encourages you and me, you know, all of us, to stay in the game, to keep broadening our context for connecting with one another, not by trying to vie for whose truth is right, but for the truth of the love, and you could say, of how we really belong to each other.